Hello and welcome to the Methodist Podcast, published on the 21st of April, 2022. As the war in Ukraine continues, we talk to a Methodist minister who's just returned from Poland, where he was helping match families seeking sanctuary with more than 50 offers of home here in the UK. We chat with a Learning Network coordinator who's waiting for a family of 11 to join them from Ukraine, and a minister from Birmingham who supported a family from Syria tells us how we should welcome people who are escaping war. The Reverend Dr. Chris Evans is a minister from the Basingstoke and Reading Circuit of the Methodist Church. Chris is also the deputy head and chaplain at the Reading School, who are trying to match more than 50 homes that have been offered by the local community with families from Ukraine.
On the 18th of March, when the government published its scheme, we put out a form to the parents of the school saying that let's see if we could do something together. In no small part because the school in 1938 took in children through the Kinder Transport scheme. And we know we've got a track record of trying to reach out to those who are most vulnerable and feel a moral obligation to that. But from my perspective, education is always a moral endeavour. So you're always asking, why are we doing this? What's the moral purpose of this? Even your maths and your French and your physics is delivered with the sake of a goal in mind. So actually, as a school community, you're saying, well, what's the moral purpose of what we're doing? Feels important. And it feels to me like there's not much point continuing to teach 14-year-old boys physics if when you face the political and humanitarian crisis like this, you're not also saying to these students, look, this is how we respond. And the same in the church. We're invited to pray and to trust not on our own understanding, but to look to God for his grace. But sometimes it gives us hands to do things, and there are opportunities. And there's a clear opportunity here for the church, for the school, for the local communities of which we're part, to step into the breach between those refugees who are trapped on the border or who are in shelters in Poland and those people who've got homes in villages and towns around us. So a little bit of mediation. But yeah, we're just trying to do that little bit that we can with the little community that we've got.
Chris, you've just come back from Poland. Tell me about your journey and how it came about.
So 3 weeks ago, a chap with lots of experience taking aid into Eastern Europe, who happens to be the father-in-law of a parent at the school, asked if we could help collect tins. They were looking for high protein value produce to get into Kharkiv and Kiev in particular. Their networks were taken to the edge of the border. And there were some young Baptists who had taken them by the van load. A particularly generous donor bought a couple of minibuses. So we thought we've got a bit of a network there that we can build upon. We'd already put out a form asking the parents at the school where I work and in the circuit if anyone wanted to host. Because there seemed to be this gap between the government going live with the Homes for Ukraine scheme on March 18th and any meaningful way of connecting people. So we fairly quickly ramped up 25 to 30 hosts. We're now, I think, 53. And we realized that actually the network joining together refugees in greatest need with host families was pretty limited. I think that's now improving a little bit with a number of organizations on a much larger scale beginning to do that matching. Obviously, they've taken 3 or 4 weeks to get to the point where they feel they can roll things out. So the goal was to build upon the networks that we'd already established through sending out the aid into Poland to the border of Ukraine and see if there were refugees coming east at the same time on the same kind of routes, because quite often the minibuses were going east with aid and coming west with refugees. So trying to build upon those networks and see if there was anything useful to be done there.
And how's the process going of matching the people you met from Ukraine with the homes that have been made available in Reading?
Individuals and a mother with a child are relatively easy to place. So of the 53 homes for Ukraine that we've had offered just through the school and the church in Reading, so most people who've offered via the little network that we're building have got one bedroom. That can place an individual or a mother with a child under 10 very comfortably. It's slightly harder with almost all the other families. So most of the families that we've got from Ukraine are multi-generational families. The grandparents, two grandparents, a mother and one, two or three children. Placing a family of that size isn't easy. So actually there is a challenge in trying to place families that match with one another. I think it has to be better having some mediation than just going onto Facebook and saying, can anyone take me, which I think has been the major force so far. Yeah, we've asked extensive questions about the nature of the accommodation, the nature of the family, what they imagine would be easiest for them to host. And the next challenge is the visa and then the transport logistics.
Tell me a little bit more about your visit to Poland and what you saw there.
We kind of went to five places of note. First of all, we flew to Krakow, and through a Polish network in Krakow, we joined up with an organization that are specifically trying to care for refugees. Krakow was pretty busy. It was mainly the scout movement in Poland, and there are several denominations of scouts, but it was mainly the scouts who are volunteering to look after folk in shelters. So we found dozens of shops that have been converted into shelters, railway stations, broadly any municipal building was filled with camp beds kind of rammed next to each other. And actually people seemed in relatively good spirits, but the refugee network were explaining to us that charity and goodwill was running a little bit thin, that the country is fairly well saturated. And whilst 3 or 4 weeks ago people being very generous, that's slowing down a little bit. Traveling further east, we then went to Rzeszów, which is where the UK visa application centre is. So any Ukrainian who's come out without a passport is being funneled to this one spot. It's a single door at the bottom of a tower block, which is open from 9 till 5 each day. And anyone who's hoping to come to the UK through either visa scheme is being sent there if they don't have a passport. But I found lots of people with lots of genuine questions about work, about the cost of living, about medication, about pets, about disability. And there was no one from the United Kingdom saying this is what the Homes for Ukraine scheme is. Going further east again, we got to Chelm, and actually Chelm's right on the border with Ukraine on the road to Lviv. It wasn't actually as full as we expected because they've had most of the refugees in transit. Those who are left behind in the Baptist church there are those who are harder to move on for a number of different reasons. So I met a very elderly gentleman, a family with a mother who's deaf, and the refugees stuck there are very much stuck. It's where do we go from here? Whereas in most of the other destinations, they were kind of transit points and people trying to help send them on. In Chelm, they're expecting a second wave imminently as eastern cities are either liberated or reach the point of being so badly bombed out that humanitarian corridors are established. We then travelled back west towards Warsaw, stopping at Lublin, where we found, again, a high degree of saturation. I stopped at a couple's house there who'd taken in 80 refugees. They'd literally put 40 beds in their garage. So imagine a double garage and then put 40 beds in it. And that was pretty much where their refugees were hosted. They first opened up to 3 refugees. And it was, you know, really telling to look at the board up on the wall in their garage. They were placing 228 refugees into Spain, into Holland, into Germany, into France, into Italy that weekend. At that point, that represented 5% of the total number of Ukrainian refugees who the UK had given visas to. So that's one couple just out of goodwill. And then Warsaw, just probably still up to 70,000 refugees in Warsaw beginning to spill out onto the streets. But our government's response is to say that the reason why we're demanding visas is 3 things. Number one, to prevent unsuitable individuals from entering the country for security reasons. Number two, to try and provide positive matches. And number three, to prevent people trafficking. Well, I don't see the visa system as doing anything to prevent people trafficking because we've got the most vulnerable people sofa surfing their way across Central Europe. I don't think the visa process does anything to establish positive matches. That's why we're doing the work that we're doing with the 50 families in our local community and why lots of other similar organisations are doing the same. So the only real argument is that it's about national security. And the surprise for me is why the British government thinks it's important to do that. But Germany, France, Spain, Italy, Holland, Denmark, Poland say actually they'll take anyone. So, politically, there's an argument to be made about the current situation with visas, meaning that the United Kingdom isn't doing as much as other countries and it's not doing it fast enough. And right now we're, you know, speaking with people who've managed to get as far away as Romania or Italy and are there trying to complete visas. But you've got to imagine they've been through five or six kind of transitory bases crowded with thousands or tens of thousands of people, and they've been vulnerable at every single turn. So when you see whole families queuing up in the railway stations to collect little packets of food and drink, and you know that's happening across all of those cities in Poland, you have to recognize that these are the most profoundly vulnerable people, and almost all women and children, with very few men, some very elderly folk as well. So my experience was that, you know, there are people basically standing up in pajamas and welly boots because that's what they left their homes in. And there are children who've still got their addresses written on their bodies in ink because that's the only way the parents could be sure that they would have any form of identification. So the fact that we're then asking them for utility bills from the 1st of January or for international passports when they had no intention of leaving before the war started is something that makes me a little bit indignant.
Bridget Down is the Learning and Development Officer for the South West region, and she's waiting to welcome a family of 11 Ukrainians to her farm.
So we're known in the farming community as people that host people all the time. We've rarely gone through a season of married life in the last 20 years of not having somebody here that isn't a blood relative. And so people knew that we'd registered to welcome a Ukrainian family. Then a friend of a friend heard of this family and knew that it was a big family that were needing help. And they didn't really mind where they went. They didn't mind where on the continent they were, but they really were struggling to find anywhere where 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 people could be. And so we were asked, and I remember going out into the cow shed and saying to my in-laws and my husband, so we've been contacted. How would you feel about a family of 11 arriving? And them all looking at each other and going, yeah, that sounds right.
So tell me a little bit about the family who are coming to join you.
Yeah, so the family, they are from Kyiv. They are all at different stages in their life. It feels in some way like we're taking on a whole youth group. So we have the three older ones, so the three oldest girls. They were all due to be going on in their schooling career. So one was going on to uni and the other two were going into college and into very specific fields of education. And for those three, their future changed overnight. And actually, my heart goes out to them first. As a teenager, as an 18-year-old or a 16-year-old, having that future changed immediately, that's hard. That's really hard. Then we've got the middle bunch of children that are like secondary school age. They're just incredible, mainly boys, just looking for fun, football, gaming, and being out on the farm. Then we have the littler ones, which I just adore because that's sort of from my background. I love littler children. And so the little one in particular, he's just got such a zest for life. He's only five and he is always in every Zoom call. I feel like I know that kid the best. And then going through to the parents. And obviously for both of them, it's that moment of we had to make this choice for our children. They've both said that if they were there on their own, they wouldn't have tried to get across the border and progress, but they had to get out for their children's sake. And both of them have a real longing to see their children succeed. They're really aware of what effect this is having on their children. The children are already displaying signs of PTSD. And I think that's a reality of the situation. I feel for the daddy of the family as the head of the house, trying to provide for his family, but not able to do that. And one thing I've learned about their culture is they are not people that want to come and live off us. They want to provide for themselves. And I can really understand his mentality of, well, I've got to do this for myself. And so it's going to be about trying to help him do that. I think the other thing to say is in the last week, we've added a set of grandparents to the fray. So we have a set of grandparents also coming. And then yesterday, we also have a friend coming as well from the family, who is also a teenager and quite vulnerable. And she's been travelling with the family and she needed a place of safety as well.
You've already got a family of your own with children. Have you prepared your family for welcoming their new guests?
Well, it's rural, so this is going to be different, isn't it? So the mum of the family keeps saying to me, because I keep saying to her, you do realise how rural we are, because we really are like as rural as you can get. And she's like, yeah, but for my children's restoration, she uses the word restoration a lot. I need them to be in a quiet place. Not surrounded by scary noises. Now, we've got cows, we've got tractors, but surely they'll soon get acclimatised to those noises. But actually, you know, we recognise it when people visit the farm here. They love the space, they love the silence, they love the darkness. That's important for people for restoration and peace. And actually, I think, yes, this won't be ideal for them in the long term, but actually for this 6 months of just resting, because what they've been through is so immense, actually it's going to be so important. So they're going to be staying in both our house and our in-laws house, which is here on the farm. And then we also have a mobile home as well. The grandparents that I spoke about earlier, they are going to be staying with friends. And the 18-year-old is also going to stay with another friend because we've just been talking with her and seeing what she wants, because she had a degree of independence in the Ukraine. And actually to come and live amongst the family unit again was going to be, you know, interesting for her. So she's actually going to be living with a friend in a city, which is great. This whole journey has been about what's right for you, what's right for, you know, the family coming. And you hold what you give very lightly. And you say, this is what I'm giving. Is this right for you? And I'm giving them the opportunity at every stage to say, actually, we'd prefer to be somewhere else, or we'd prefer to do something different. And that's okay, because actually all my responsibility is to give.
You've got an existing family at home, haven't you? Have you prepared your children for the arrival of their guests?
Yeah, so I have four children they are a very similar age. Obviously, we don't have nine, but we have four. So they are really good at receiving guests. And people that have come into this house in the past have said, you know, your children are amazing. They take nothing that there's a stranger sat on their sofa too. But the children really are really open. They have that heart. They've been brought up with that heart, I suppose. The children were asked yesterday how they would feel, and I listened into their conversations, and actually they were talking about the privilege of having a moment to see another culture. And I think that is incredible that they were speaking about that. They see this as an opportunity to make friends in a different way. Remember, my children are rural children, that diversity doesn't come along very often in a rural position like this. So actually to have those conversations. So what the other mother and I have done is set up WhatsApp groups between the children. And we're monitoring those, obviously, so that they start to introduce themselves to each other, and so that they start to build that relationship. So both sides of the children can ask questions of each other about the things that they like doing and what their expectations are, really.
And what about the local community and the church community? Are you being supported by them as well?
Yeah, so I just need to say a massive thank you to anyone who's listening that actually has supported us in one way or another, whether that be through prayer. I think prayer and wisdom is the first thing that we've really appreciated. I feel that sense of peace upon me every day, that I know that we're being carried by other people. But also within financially, people are giving in all sorts of different ways. Our garden room is full of things that people have sent for the Ukrainian family. And I just love that. They see this moment as part of the community effort, of the community's response, and also the wider church.
4 years ago, as part of the community sponsorship programme, the Reverend David Butterworth welcomed a family to Birmingham who were escaping the war in Syria. David, tell me a little bit about the circumstances that led that family to Birmingham.
They'd fled Syria, like so many countless other people had fled Syria. We had heard some atrocious stories of Syria and the surrounding countries that were receiving Syrians that were fleeing from their homes. And we'd seen incredibly moving video from Syrians that had come into Britain through the government programmes. And the Methodist Church in Birmingham District received, with other people, over 500 Syrians through that programme. The community sponsorship programme was an additional programme that hadn't really got any gravitas at that stage, similar to the humanitarian sponsorship programme that's in the ether at the moment. But so it was a very straightforward programme that we were actually regularly in the Home Office and we were in the House of Lords as well, championing this particular initiative. It's now got legs all over the United Kingdom. It's a programme that would be equally fitting for a rural community, a city community, or a coastal community. And we've got Methodist links with people in all of those various categories. And again, that needs to be highlighted on your pro formas to say, this is who we are, this is the accommodation, this is geographically where we are based, and it would suit a family or a person particularly in this particular category. And be as clear as the day is long, really. Don't wax lyrically, wax factually. And I would encourage people to have collaborative friends and colleagues around you so that it doesn't all fall on your shoulders, because there'll be some beautifully happy times, but there'll be desperately sad and alarming times as well, because some of the trauma that some of these people have been through, we will never experience it in Britain, please God. But it slowly comes out in time, and be patient, I would recommend, by listening to their story and not thinking that you need to probe deeper. Let them tell you their story in their time.
Although the circumstances are a little different here, and we hope the situation in Ukraine is going to allow families to return home when it's safe, what have we learned about welcoming families who are seeking sanctuary from conflict?
Mike, that's so important to understand that they are fleeing conflict. People that have seen the news will be alarmed with the decimation of the surrounding cities that we've seen, particularly in the Ukraine. And it was particularly so in Syria and in other places as well. They will naturally want to go back. Home will always be home in their hearts and their heads. But actually, for many, it will be unlikely that they can go back. Because the war-torn decimation there will take years, not months. And again, we need to be factual in that. Love these people to bits, but don't smother them with love. Love them, but stand back a little bit and enable them to grow and breathe in deeply, to associate with people around you. And it's so important to have that collaborative nature that none of us are saints and none of us will be able to handle a family or an individual by ourselves. And it would be inappropriate that one person becomes dependent on just one more person. And so, you know, as we do in church or interfaith communities or wider community work, we always try to work collaboratively so that you have a network of different people that know different facets and aspects of the local community, whether that's health, welfare, mental well-being, schools, social activities, so that it doesn't just fall into your telephone, as it were. And I would start to prepare that group now, well before you receive anybody, so that you can come together over coffee or a cup of tea, prayerfully, or in a Bible study group, perhaps, or an ecumenical community group, and really get to know each other, because you will be handling some very careful, sensitive people. And it won't all be plain sailing. No matter how much we would want it to be plain sailing, I can tell you it will not be. And you need to be resilient in that regard as well, because these desperately shocked people might manifest in unexpected ways. And you need to be closely in partnership with your local a strategic migration partnership, friends and colleagues. And it may only look like you, you know, perhaps in Devon or somebody else in the Lake District or somebody else in Birmingham or Norfolk. But actually, when you start to explore, there'll be other people with expertise and understanding that you never knew existed. And they are invaluable allies and friends that will come and rally around this particular person or family to make their life tolerable in the beginning and hopefully life-giving in the near future.
That first family who you were able to provide a safe home for, they're thriving now, aren't they?
They're thriving, and I think that's because we found a very trusting group of people to surround them, and we gave them space as well. And we briefed each other that sometimes when we would want to offer them something, the answer might be no, and you might not expect a no, but actually it's healthy regarding their well-being if they feel that they trust you sufficiently to be able to say no. Because sometimes when we want to be so gushing and so generous, it might be just far, far too much that their head can't take it. They are now really, really thriving. And actually, truthfully, many of the 500 that came into Birmingham, 550 Syrians that came into, are thriving in jobs. Even in Warwick Hospital, one of them is a heart surgeon. Another one is a bus driver in Birmingham. Others are school teachers and others are doing local jobs locally and making a living. And they're very happy, very happy.
The Methodist Church in Britain and All We Can are continuing their work, raising funds to support the people of Ukraine seeking safety from war. As communities face violence, upheaval and trauma, your urgent support is needed. Donations will be used to support the response to the crisis and ensure that critical humanitarian aid is available to those who need it. Please pray for the people of Ukraine today. And if you can, give to the Ukraine Emergency Appeal. Full details are available on the All We Can website. From myself, Mike Ivett, goodbye.